Dr. Bertie Squire is Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. He's also an honorary consultant in infectious diseases at the Royal here in the city. Bertie, thanks for being with us again. We do appreciate your time. Can we address, first of all, the should we, shouldn't we wear masks? And is wearing a scarf around your face doing any good at all? I know Scotland have been talking about this week.
Thank you, Tony, and good morning, everyone. This is a question that, as you say, has been in the news for a while. People often refer to these masks as cough or cloth masks, and they're distinct from the surgical or protective medical masks, which should be reserved for use in health and care facilities. And I'd like to emphasize that point. But the evidence for wearing these cough or cloth masks is scarce, and the effect of them is modest. And as you know, the evidence is currently under consideration by the government. But the effect rests in the cloth catching the droplets from individuals who may be shedding the virus, but who don't yet have symptoms. So their main use may be in public spaces where it's not possible to keep 2 meters away from others, such as public transport, buses and trains. And I've heard it described quite well as something that you might consider to do as a courtesy to others in the public. So it's preventing onward transmission rather than protecting the individual wearer. And I would like to emphasize that, as with hospital personal protection, it's important that they're used well. That means they need to be washed regularly, kept dry, and they're not a substitute for social distancing and hand washing, but they may provide an additional protection where social distancing and hand washing is difficult. If I may, I want to make a point here that there are places in the world where social distancing and hand washing and those protective measures are really difficult. And one such place is Malawi, where we have a long-standing collaborative work and where access to basic health care is limited. Now, in Malawi, they are using their own cloth-made masks as part of their preventive efforts, but they have real difficulties with some of their basic health care facilities, and we have a fundraising appeal out at the moment for that, the Health and Resilience Fund. And if listeners are interested in going to see details about that, I emphasize it's not fundraising for masks, but fundraising for our collaborative response to the health sector there. Okay. Do go to our website.
Social distancing seems to be working, and the government have always said we are going to go on the science, we will go on the evidence. And we've seen, you know, those daily slides. We've seen a peak, and we've seen the curve come down. We are still seeing deaths, and we will still see that for some time, sadly. But as we head into changes, Bertie, how vital is it that we do carry on obeying those rules, and we're just civil to other people, and we're understanding of other people as well, because we are all in this together?
I think this is really important. It's clear that social distancing and hand washing are going to remain really important. And I think if we do see a return to workplaces, I suspect we will see measures in place that will limit the numbers of people in offices and workspaces to make it possible to stay 2 meters apart. And as you say, keeping distance, washing hands, staying at home if symptomatic, these are all things that I think are going to remain really important. As you say, we're in it together.
The testing has been a huge story over the past 4 or 5 weeks, and the expansion of testing is the big news this week. How much of a difference will this make? Because there's still some confusion as to numbers. And, you know, Dominic Raab, he laid out his stall, didn't he, at the start of all this, and said, you know, sorry, it's Matt Hancock, the health secretary, 100,000 by the end of April. It seems to have been a bit of a scramble, this.
Yes, I think, remember, this is the testing for the disease, and the main benefit of expanding this is, in the short term, is going to be in helping key workers who have symptoms to know if they have COVID-19 or not, and therefore if they're safe to go to work. in care homes or health facilities or supermarkets. So that's the, that remains the key benefit. In the longer or medium term, it may be possible, as capacity rises, to use the testing along with contact tracing. So contact tracing is where an individual who tests positive it becomes possible to identify who else that positive individual has been in contact with, and they can then be alerted to self-isolate to prevent further onward transmission. So short-term, helping people to know whether they have the infection or not, and therefore safe to go to work. Longer-term, it may be possible to increase the prevention of onward transmission through contact tracing.
And of course, a lot of people have been talking about apps, and, you know, we download an app and you leave your Bluetooth on and that will alert us if somebody near us has been tested positive. But this all depends on the vast majority of the population downloading this app. I mean, you can't just have 10,000 people do it, because it's not going to work.
No, you're right. And that's why I said in the longer and medium term, I think the way in which contact tracing is rolled out and the place of apps or the other traditional means of contact tracing, the way in which that gets rolled out needs quite a lot more thought. I would just like to say that contact tracing is not new. We've used it in public health. We still use it in public health in this country. For example, if somebody's diagnosed with tuberculosis, we contact trace their contacts and we offer treatment for them. So it's something that we know about, but how to put that to scale is something that does need a lot more work.
And just one final point, if I may. It looks like some mention of how we ease restrictions is taking place today. By human nature, if we hear a glimmer of good news, it is human nature that we go, ooh, it's okay now. I think I'll go out. I'll have two walks today instead of one. Or I think I'll nip to the supermarket just for that, you know, non-essential item kind of thing. This is a crucial time. It's a dangerous time. And we've seen in Germany, you know, they released or relaxed their lockdown rules and they've seen a slight peak. The big fear is a second wave here. So we just need to keep on keeping on, don't we?
Certainly, we definitely do. Any slight rise in the number of interactions in the community can bring with it the risk of an increase in transmission. So absolutely, the things that are in place at the moment remain really important until we can see that we really are getting on top of the pandemic.
I'm going to leave it there, but I know your time's a premium. There's a lot of people who want to talk to you, Bertie, but thanks for your time this morning. It's very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's Professor Bertie Squire, Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, and honorary, you see, I managed to say at that time, consultant in infectious diseases at the Royal Liverpool Hospital. These are the people who know, and we appreciate his time. 18 minutes past.